life, and it's ending 1 minute at a time.
I was blind, but now I see.
Working jobs we hate, so we buy shit we don't need.
Ideas are worthless.
If you had one shot,
everything I'd ever read, heard, seen was now organized and available.
Now you fucking khakis.
Life moves pretty fast.
The Biohacking Secret Show.
Dr. Atoussa Madavi, welcome to the Biohacking Secret Show.
Thank you for having me. It's great to be here.
So, well, I guess what made you reach out and tell us a little bit of your background? Like, what have you been doing in the world? What are you passionate about? What's your story that you tell people when you're at a cocktail party and they want to hear it in 45 seconds or less? I'm kidding.
I'm kidding
about the time constraint. Go ahead.
Okay, good.
Sometimes people are like, well, my dad looked at my mom one night on a date and had this twinkle in his eye.
Yeah, well, you know, I can really like do, you know, continue for 45 minutes to tell you, you know, about my background, but I make it short, not 45 seconds, but something that we can handle.
Cool.
So actually I have a book and I explain some of my journey as growing up and the experiences that I encountered growing up. And so one thing that really was pivotal in my childhood was I was very observant when it came to elderly, for example, my grandfather from my mom's side. I was really close to him and he lived with us, you know, with my grandma, but he was old. He was older, but I was very close to him. My two older siblings were in school, but I was at home. So a lot of times he was the one playing with me. He's the one that is feeding me. So I was really close to him. But I noticed the difference between him at a young age, 1 year old, 2, 3, 4 years old. You have no concept of aging. But I saw the stark contrast between him and, let's say, my dad and the younger people around, right? He was walking with a cane. I was always like, curiosity thinking, not really questioning, asking anybody else, but like thinking to myself, what's going on with him? Why is he? And then when I was 4, he passed away.
You remember having these inquiries before you were 4?
I remember, I have vivid memories of my life going back to even 2 years old.
Oh my gosh, that's amazing. Okay, please continue. We'll talk about that later.
Yeah. And then when he was 4, when I was 4, he passed away. And, but, you know, as most cultures, they don't really explain to kids, a 4-year-old, like what happened to your grandfather. Mm-hmm. He just one day was there, the next day he wasn't there. But I did see him because he died at home. And I did see the commotion and the door. They wouldn't let me in the room. But when his room door was open, I would see him laying down, eyes closed. So that was really a trigger for me. And then later on, my grandma from my dad's side came to stay with us. She had rheumatoid arthritis. So we have that autoimmune gene in our family. So she had rheumatoid arthritis. Later on, my aunt got it. But then when she came to stay with us for a visit for like a couple of weeks or maybe a little bit longer, I used to see her putting these ointments on herself, on her joints. And then I was just really drawn to helping her. Like I would say, and by this time, I would say I was like 6 years old. And I would get the creams from her and I would be rubbing her joints.
Mm.
And very, she said,
very
oh my
kind
God,
of you. Very caring.
Well, yeah. And it brings me to later in my academic life, where I actually looked into different alternative approaches to health. And then also there is a story about my dad lifting up the same grandma to the hospital bed when she was actually passing and he threw out a disc. So now I'm 12 years old and I'm walking on his back and, you know, I'm doing all these things with my feet, with my hands to help his back. Mm-hmm. So fast forward to college and I'm taking pre-med courses, but I don't know exactly which way to go. But there was always something in me that didn't like the hospital environment. as a child, I had visited, you know, people in hospitals, like family members. A friend of mine passed away, but he was in a car accident. He was in coma when I was 18 years old. So I went to the hospital to visit him. So it was like a weird environment for me. So when I looked into alternative medicine and I went to see how chiropractors work, it was an immediate click with me, because I had used, even as a child, my hands to help my grandma, my dad, etc. And so, yes.
Was there something that you observed in your experience using your hands? Can you explain that a little bit more, so that people have a connection to like what you had attributed, whether there's a benefit or something to the hand? Like, did you just like putting hands on someone you love, or what did you see?
Oh, okay. No, it wasn't so much that. I think for me, it was an intuitive skill. And because it was my healing was my calling.
There we go. I think a lot of our listeners relate to that.
Yeah. Yeah. And so, you know, and a lot of times you have signs and synchronicities in your life where you're directed towards that calling. And I feel like putting hands on people, just being drawn to that and asking if I could do that for you, like grandma or dad or whatever. Mm-hmm. It was just very intuitive, and it made me feel rewarded to see someone feeling better and putting my hands. Well, hands are, everybody's hands have extreme, like a wonderful healing energy. Human hands are actually abundant with healing energy. It's just some of us are called to use it as a profession and some of us aren't. But
well, they radiate ultraviolet light. I mean, that's been shown. Dogs can see it. There's a lot of animals that can see it. It's coming out of our hands. It comes out of our tongues as well, the bottoms of our feet. This isn't woo-woo. I mean, there are woo-woo books written on it that haven't put it all together, but everything's kind of coming to a head now. And there are books, I think one of them is called like Hands of Light or something like that, but we're literally emitting light.
I have
light.
That book.
You do, right? So you know what I'm talking about.
I have
about.
The
so,
Hands of Light, yeah.
Beautiful. Like we're literally emitting ultraviolet light from our hands. And then additionally, when you look at the neurology, because I know a lot of people have taken a great interest in science recently. Well, the neurology, like the nerve endings that are in the bottoms, that's my boy. Hey, come here, buddy. You want some ultraviolet light? Kumba. Come here. You want some ultraviolet light from my hands? All right, let me calm my dog down a little bit. There's concentration, high density of concentration of nerves in the bottoms of our feet and our hands, and of course, our tongue. And it all interfaces directly with our brain. So I'm mentioning that because all of this is, I completely agree with you. And it is the merging of the woo with neuroscience that is being proven to be true.
Yeah.
Please continue.
You're absolutely correct. And this is not a new notion in neurology or neurosciences. We've known for like probably 100 years or more, meaning in the scientific community, that we have abundance of sensory neurons in our hands, in our feet, at the tips of the fingers.
It's something like 7,000, just 7,000 neurons just in the bottom of the foot, isn't it?
Because we use it for proprioception.
Yeah.
And at the feet, on the hands, and it's also used for coordination and balance, etc. And so, you know, and that's exactly what happens when we encourage, not only in child developmental, you know, psychology or sciences, and there are experiments that have done that caressing and loving on your children when they are infants and when they are newborns, that helps them grow. Mm-hmm. And, you know, there are experiments done on mice that the scientists will isolate a mom not to basically caress or leak their offspring, and compare the growth rate of another mice with, you know, who is actually free to be affectionate and love on their children and, you know, touch and lick and all of that. And the growth is retarded in basically.
Yeah, the whole thing is retarded, that people would even think that they're going to produce similar results. I'm just having a little fun with words there that some people won't say anymore. Yeah, it's retarded that we would even think that a child that was isolated from its parent and given, you know, some sort of machine would experience any type of the same physical, emotional, spiritual development as a child that was able to exchange energy fields and torus fields with its mother.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Absolutely. So just from that perspective alone, and even your relationship with cats and dogs and your pets, that, you know, they're so much happier when you pet them, you're affectionate, they want to come to you more. So anyways, now backtracking to my history. So then I became a chiropractor. But then as a chiropractor, we have a broad scope. And a lot of people come to us as a portal of entry. So I was getting all these patients with comorbidities or secondary health conditions on top of their neuromusculoskeletal conditions, diabetes, high blood pressure, cholesterol, fibromyalgia, Crohn's disease, digestive issues, Hashimoto's, thyroid issues. And so I, even though as chiropractors, we do study nutrition and some of the other supplements and, you know, recommendations that we do, but I wanted to deepen my studies. So I got a certification in functional medicine and integrative medicine, which was an extra work postdoctorate for chiropractors. And
thanks for putting in the extra work.
I'm a forever student. I tell my students where I teach at the university that I'm a forever student, and a good doctor is always learning.
Absolutely.
And if you know the root of the word doctor is from a Greek word doser, and the spelling is different than how we, you know, write doctor, but it means to teach. It means a teacher. So a doctor is really a teacher because of what? Because you're teaching your patients, your clients, how to become their own physicians, how to become their own healers through proper diet, lifestyle, daily routines, nutritional support, etc. And so then, you know, I started doing functional medicine, have been doing it for the last 17 years. And for my own personal healing journey, I started doing yoga in 2001.
I taught yoga for years.
Oh, fantastic. Yeah. What style of yoga?
Mostly vinyasa. I taught at part of my training. I'm the same way. Like I'm always looking for things that interest me that I think would be beneficial to people in our community and people that I'm able to interact with. And one of them was like, okay, I need to get really good at some of the functional training modalities. So I got a job as an NCSF certified personal trainer in 2012, working at one of the best personal training gyms, David Barton Gym in the country, taught yoga. I'd done yoga hundreds of times, often along with like Tony Horton DVDs, you know, Tony Horton from P90X.
Sounds really familiar.
Yeah, really familiar, right? So it was funny, in 2016, I told Tony Horton, it was the first time I'd ever said it publicly, but when I was working at the gym, doing group exercise classes, training people one-on-one, I told them, I'm like, I can teach yoga here too. You guys need an extra yoga instructor. And they said, you've got your certifications? And I'm like, oh yeah. And in my head, I'm like, certifications with a shitload of Tony Horton yoga. And so they're like, we're going to do a test class and see how you do. So they gave me a test class. They packed in, you know, there's like 40 or 50 people there. And I just did a whole bunch of stuff that I had learned from Tony Horton. And I was given the cues that he gave and doing the things. And they were like, people went nuts. They're like, you crushed that. All right, we're giving you yoga. Like, you got five classes a week. You're teaching yoga. And then for 2 years after that, I taught yoga classes, and it was like a lot of people's favorite at the gym. And for me, it was more just I wanted to build that skill set, because I'm always looking at like, what's the next gap for me that could help people? So I love yoga, and I appreciate that aspect of your background too with Ayurveda, which we'll continue to integrate as we go. Absolutely. But please keep going.
Yeah, no problem. So just being a business owner, my own clinic in Beverly Hills, having people like 6 people working for me, and being the doctor, being the manager, I had an office manager, but you know how that is. You're like really doing everything yourself. I was stressed out. I developed anxiety because of that. And those two, stress and anxiety, had caused me insomnia. And in 2001, to remedy that, due to recommendation of a friend, I started doing yoga for my own personal benefit. Mm-hmm. Within 6 months, there was such a huge shift in the way I could handle stress, anxiety. And then as I continued practicing, within 2 years, I became such an avid believer in yoga, like as a practitioner, as someone that actually does it, you know, that I basically became addicted, but I was always also incorporating some of those postures into my chiropractic patients that had chronic pain, arthritis, disc herniation, et cetera. And they were also seeing a huge benefit. So finally, that longing inside of me that had been cultivated through the practice of yoga, which invariably makes you like really anchored in your spirituality, pushed me to want to actually know more and do more in the world of yoga. And that took me to India in the year 2011, where...
Was this your eat, pray, love moment?
Basically, pretty much. It's funny because I think it was kind of simultaneous with that movie.
It's a great movie. I like it. Got some good stuff in
it. But I hadn't even seen the movie.
Really?
When I got back, I hadn't. When I got back, my friends were saying, oh my God, you went to India. Did you watch this movie? I said, no, then I watched it. So the first time I started my basically Kriya yoga journey in the US in 2010. But in 2011, I went to India, stayed there for a month, and did a whole bunch of advanced programs for personal journey. It wasn't to be able to teach. And then in 2012, I went back and stayed for 6 months in an intensive Hatha yoga teacher training. And we didn't know when is weekend, when is the weekdays, because it was 7 days, 24 hours a day, yoga, meditation, studying, reciting, etc. And then I came back and started teaching. I mean, my whole spiritual journey had gone to a different level, and I appreciated the different sense of who I am, and that is within every one of us. And while in India, they gave
us... You are a spiritual being having a human experience. You're in this meat suit. You're completely detached. Now you're questioning all of these things you've spent so much time on.
And the soup keeps on adding new ingredients. And you're like, oh my goodness.
You it's know? Totally like the blessing and the, oh my gosh, moment. You know, anyway, please continue. It's funny because we all go through it.
We do. And then while in India, during that Hatha yoga teacher training, they gave us a 3-hour course on introduction to Ayurvedic medicine. And I had this big aha moment. I'm like, that's the missing link. Because I had the body modality, the chiropractic, right, and physiotherapy, and then yoga. And of course, yoga is also mind and emotion, you know, and psychology, you know, psychology, basically. And then there was a missing link, and that was, how do you, from functional medicine, having the, you know, the chemistry under control and the physiology, and of course, based on that template of the biomarkers through functional medicine blood work, you do individualize treatment protocol. But how do you add another layer of individualization? And that was the missing link. And that came to me through Ayurveda. Because in Ayurvedic medicine, now you're adding the bioelemental, constitutional aspect of each individual, which
can
is
you explain that? That was you had too many $5 words in a sentence.
Oh gosh, sorry.
No, it's all good. I said that. I did not mean that as a criticism. I meant that
I know
a big joking. Sentence. I agree with you, but I want to break it down so people's eyes continue to focus because they're loving what you're saying right now.
Yeah. So because in conventional medicine, your usual medical model, right? Mm-hmm. Sick care. It's a cookie cutter approach. It's a one size fits all. Everyone with hypertension gets one of three different meds or the same three meds all at mm-hmm. once.
Same thing. How many of them contain petroleum or some sort of heavy metal? I don't know. I'm not a doctor. I'm just here for fun. Keep going, please.
Yeah. Yeah. But you know, the good news is I think more and more people, because of, you know, people like you that are out there with...
No one listens to me. They know I'm a joker. I'm a comedian.
No, but I'm saying, you know, people who are on social media.
Yeah. Oh, for sure. Yeah.
You know, and you're putting this information out there that are actually becoming more curious and actually mm-hmm. interested in learning are now more open. So that conventional medicine model that is a cookie cutter approach hasn't worked.
Or people have experienced that, right? They've experienced that themselves. They're like, okay, wait, so I take this and then that doesn't work. Or they take it and then it causes something else. And they say, well, now this is happening. You know, now my penis isn't working. Oh, well, then you need to take this. Okay, but now that makes my penis work, but then this isn't working.
Right.
You know?
No, you're right.
And
you have to take something for the side effect. Like you take this to lower your blood pressure or your depression, but now you have to take this to cope with the side effects. And, you know, and then you look at the pharmaceutical ads, right, on television. And the benefits are the time that they spend on explaining the benefits on an ad or a commercial is much less than the side effects, right?
Yeah.
And so, So in functional medicine, you bring a layer of individualization because most functional medicines doctors are running labs, right? Mm-hmm. Are doing a functional medicine blood work, are doing environmental toxins, are doing mycotoxins or mold, because they want to get to the root cause of what's causing your symptoms, your illness as an individual at the physiological level, chemical level, etc. Basically the biochemistry of your bodily functions, how your genetic detox pathways are detoxifying the environmental toxins. So you do another test for that. And so
but one sec, I'm going to have you pick back up here. I know I like to have a bunch of different conversations going because of your background with Ayurveda too. Like they didn't have these tests, right? So it wasn't, you go to a doctor, you're not feeling well, functional or not. And I'm bringing this up because I was like, I used to tell everyone, you just got to find a functional doctor. And now everyone calls themselves a functional doctor and they all run 100 tests. And a lot of them don't even know how to interpret the tests. And then they're like, oh, you have MTHFR and you have mold and you have Lyme disease and you have this and you have that. And the person's like more screwed up than ever. I want to almost say, before we go there, and I'm okay to go there, and I want your interpretation and application of functional medicine, I want to go, Ayurveda had a pretty good dial on this shit. And they didn't have all these tests.
Yeah.
They weren't like, we got to figure out what's going on with your genes. And, do you have mold? What's your home made out of? You know? So can you tell us a little bit about Ayurveda and then where you see the overlap and the best applications of both Ayurveda and functional medicine? Is that a fair question? And then I want you to continue with what you're talking about, but I feel like that's an important base.
Yeah. So what I was trying to show was a contrast mm-hmm. between conventional medicine being completely cookie cutter, then functional medicine brings the individualization of biochemistry. Then Ayurveda, which brings a whole new dimension of individualization and personalization of the treatment protocol. And it's not a cookie cutter approach. Now, as you said, in Ayurvedic, and by the way, just going back to my journey, so after 2012, when I came back finishing the 6 months of Hatha Yoga teacher training and becoming a what they call a master yoga teacher, then I came to the US, back to US, and went back to school and studied Ayurvedic medicine. Nice. And so that's that journey. So that's basically it. At that point, I haven't gone back to school to study anything else, but I do my own research online. Now, here is what Ayurveda does. In Ayurvedic medicine, there is actually, which is a few thousand years old. So Ayurveda is the oldest medicine on the planet, or one of the oldest, is not, if not the oldest. But even some Chinese medicine doctors would say that, yes, Chinese medicine has been around maybe for 3,500 years, 4,000 years. But Ayurveda, being the sister science of yoga, is as old as yoga. And based on which, you know, history books or which person you listen to, yoga has been around anywhere from 8,000 to 15,000 years. And Ayurveda has been extracted from the same text of tradition, like ancient texts of yoga, namely the Rig Veda and Atharva Veda. These are traditional Vedic, like going back to a few thousand years. So Ayurveda was the science of life, and long life and longevity for the yogi. But if you go back to 15,000 years ago, or even 10,000 or 8,000 years ago, in the Indian subcontinent, most of these folks were yogis. Most of these folks were living a yogic life. This is even before the religion of Hinduism. And so there was yoga before that. And so Ayurveda, being the sister science of yoga, is one of the oldest medicines. And by the way, Ayurvedic doctors or physicians or Vaidyas or Vidyas, depending on how you want to pronounce it, based on what part of
the you're saying V-E-D-A-S, correct?
V-I-Y-D-I-A, and S is just plural, Vaidya or Vidya.
V-I-Y-D-A. Okay.
Which is basically an Ayurvedic physician in that. So that means an Ayurvedic physician in Sanskrit, which is the language of Ayurveda. Those doctors also performed surgeries, by the way, in those days, to remove tumors, to fix deformities, to remove blockages. And there is a text of Ayurvedic surgeries, which goes back to 3,500 to 4,000 years ago. And it's called Shushutra Samhita, Shushutra Samhita. And it has all the ancient tools of surgery, all the instructions of how to do it.
So do you have this book? Do you have a physical copy of this book?
I do not have a physical copy of this book, no.
You got to get one of those. I want to get one of those.
But I have seen it in the libraries of the schools that I attended. Because the thing is, I never got the, because I'm not going to do the surgery, so I never, you know, got the book. But we've seen it.
Can you say the name one more time and spell it for our audience who might be interested?
Sushutra, S-U-S-H-U-T-H-R-A. Sushutra, then Samhita. S-A-M-H-I-T-R-A, Samhita, Sushutra Samhita.
If they make those in English, I'm buying one for the library. That's amazing. I mean, that's so valuable. That's fascinating.
No, there are translations. There's translations of it.
Is incredible. Thank you for that. So, that's such a gift.
So there is the Sanskrit text. Then under it, there would be a translation to English. So it's the most ancient medicine. But it had a lot of the intricacies of what we today we call scientific approach. Ayurveda has its own science. And it has its own anatomy and physiology. And what we call as genetics in the Western science of medicine in Ayurveda, it's called constitution or dosha. Dosha is the Sanskrit term for constitution. Now, what is that? That is the bioelemental genetic template. So the bioelemental karmic template equivalent of your genetic information.
Keep breaking that down, please. You've got a lot of people's attention and we want to go deeper.
Yeah. So the bioelemental, what are the bioelements? So in Ayurveda and Chinese medicine, we say that the entire universe is made up of five elements. Earth, water, fire, air, and space. And these five elements make up the entire universe.
Space is also like ether, correct?
Ether,
right?
Yes.
Yeah.
Space or ether, air or wind, and fire is fire, and earth and water.
Yeah. And if you don't know fire, earth, and water, just get out of here now. Don't hang out. Get out of here. Go listen to something else. I'm kidding.
That's great. That's hilarious.
No, this is fantastic. I'm loving it.
No, stay on. Don't go anywhere.
Okay.
And then you have these elements in their most gross form, what is visible and sensible to our five senses. But there are also subtler forms of fire in the cosmos, in the entire universe, right? The sun, the radiation, the infrareds, the ultraviolets, right?
Even a rock that's been heating up all day that a lizard sits on is receiving fire in a subtle infrared form.
Absolutely.
The sauna is a fire form.
Absolutely. So we say that entire universe and the human body is made up of this, not only the human body, everything is made up of five elements. Now, depending on the interplay of the five elements and the dominance of the five elements, each individual has a very, very unique, their own bioelemental templates. And they need to be treated accordingly. Now, there are two sets of bioelemental things going on at the same time. You have the inborn, your natural constitution at the time of conception that we call prakruti. And that is your normal, and that never changes throughout one's life. That is your normal.
Now, is that we're going to talk about how people can determine what they are also, but I know that there are different studies that go into where you were born, at what time, and of course your sign, but then there's so much of astrology where even the months have been messed with and this and that. But so we're going to want to talk about this, but okay, so you got your inborn that doesn't change, and
that
then you have
throughout one's life, and we call that prakruti, and that's at the time of conception, right? So that's kind of like the equivalent of your genetic information. But this is beyond genes. This is beyond the DNA and what is physical, but it is physical at the same time. It is physical because you have the element of air or volumes in your system that is moving things in different directions. Mm-hmm. For example, if you burp, or you have acid reflux, you have an upward vayu in action, and that is what we call udana vayu in Ayurveda. If you have to move a bowel or menstrual fluid, that requires a downward movement or downward vayu, which we call apana vayu. So as much as they are beyond touch and sense, they have physical and physiological existence and functions. And so then you determine the constitution at the time of conception, prakriti, but you also have the five elements doing their function in different dominances and percentages or being out of balance at the present moment.
Based on environments, exposures, relationships, where you're at in the world, a whole bunch of different things. Traumas. Okay. So just before
body,
we get
mind,
there,
spirit.
How are you determining where they start? I don't want to go.
The prokriti. So, yes. So the way we determine the prokriti or the natural constitution at the time of conception is by doing examination and consultation. What does this entail?
Yeah.
So we have the structural examination. What is a structural evaluation or examination? It is looking at the person in front of you and looking at their features, facial features, quality of hair, quantity of hair, quality of the skin, color of the skin, texture of the skin, texture of the hair. Are they oily? Are they not? The quality of sweat. Do they sweat? Do they not?
I sweat a lot. It's been a lifelong
problem. So these are some of the examples. Yeah. And their physical form. Are they an endomorph? Are they an ectomorph? Mm-hmm. Are they thin? Are they tall? Are they medium? Do they have nice size muscles? Or are they stocky and kind of shorter, and shorter neck, shorter fingers? So the physical, what's in front of you, is structural analysis or evaluation.
Okay.
Then you have physiological. Then you have physiological. And I'm sorry if I mentioned sweat during the structural, I was talking too fast. Sweat falls into the category of physiological. When you do physiological, there is a lot of questions. So what are these questions? And by the way, these questions apply to the individual long term, most of their lives, not the last 2 weeks, not the last 2 days, 2 months, 2 years, most of their lives, right?
I've been sweaty for 30 to 40 years.
That's your prakriti. That's your fire.
Yeah.
Now, the next question would be for someone like you, does that sweat smell or doesn't smell?
I smell great. I got the best pheromones. Everybody tells me I got the nicest pheromones. I smell great.
That's hilarious. Hilarious.
Luckily, my sweat doesn't. My Trump. Yeah. I got no Trump, but that was my attempt at a Trump. Okay, please continue.
Oh my goodness. Okay, so I'm just trying to say it's at the degree of specificity, right? So not only do you sweat or not. If the answer is yes, how much? Is it profuse or moderate? That tells me something else. So that distinguishes between two doshas or two constitutions, or whether it smells or not, it distinguishes two constitutions.
Mm.
And so it doesn't tell me you have a problem if your sweat smells. No, it just tells me your innate tendency towards a constitution or a bioelemental dominance, right? So appetite, most of your life, have you had a strong appetite? Have you had a variable appetite, or have you had a low appetite?
Okay.
Elimination. So these are all physiological questions, and there is a lot more. I'm just giving you some examples. Elimination. Do you eliminate every day? How many times? Once, twice, three times? Or you skip sometimes? Then quality of your bowel or feces, well-formed, loose, soft, hard, pebbly, log-like, heap-like, many, many, right? Now, all of this is, and more, sleep, menstrual habits, energy, all of that physiological.
But all of that is also dynamic. So like, I'm trying to understand how, you know, that you said there are these inborn tendencies.
Because I said you would tell the person in front of you, don't focus on the last 2 days, 2 weeks, 2 months, 2 years. Give me the answer for most of your life.
Okay. Okay. I gotcha. That's the tendencies overall. Okay, good. I'm with you.
Most of your life. Okay.
So this isn't something where you're not looking at their astrological chart, where they were born, what time they were born, where.
You can also do that. You can also, that's called Vedic astrology.
Okay.
Vedic astrology that also ties into Ayurveda. But that's separate from what we're talking about right now.
Yeah. Okay.
You can do that. And in addition to what we're just doing right now, but that's a third limb of Ayurveda. Right. So you do structural, physiological, and then psychological. Remember, all these three, when you're determining prakruti, or what is normal at the time of conception, you keep emphasizing long-term. I need you to tell me long-term, your long-term tendency, not your short-term tendency. Okay? Psychological, how are you under stress? Are you more agitated, irritated, angry, or are you more worried, anxious, and overwhelmed? Or do you withdraw? You are quiet and you withdraw, different things. What is your personality when everything is good, according to yourself, to your friends, to people close to you? Are you the social butterfly, happy-go-lucky? Are you enthusiastic, vivacious, and creative? Or are you the leader? Are you the go-getter? Are you ambitious? Are you the one that has a vision, focused, and or are you someone who is nurturing, loyal, supportive? You're really if you're not the leader, you're next to the leader. You are the vice president. You are the person. You're the person that pushes the leader forward.
You're either like the supporting beta or the Bravo. Like the Bravo or the Delta, I would say.
Okay.
So like sometimes like the Delta is the guy that's like, I need to know the tasks to help the Alpha, the leader, get shit done. The Bravo is like, I don't want all the pressure of having the vision and knowing that everything is on my shoulders, but I will support the shit out of you and make sure that we can do everything that you. Anyway, okay. I'm shooting from the Bravo, hip here.
I think the Bravo is the cheerleader. The Bravo, I think, is the cheer. They are the ones that are creative, open-hearted. Mm-hmm. I'll be there. I'll cheer you up. I'll push you forward. Mm. That's Bravo is the cheerleader. Delta is the support, the one that is grounded. It is solid. It is backing you up. It's, it's okay. Here's what you need to do. Here's what you need to do. Now let's go to the Bravo and they can sketch it and they can put it into, what we need to do. Blah, 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 blah.
I like that. Okay, cool.
And the Alpha is the leader. Yeah. So the Alpha is the Pitta. Pitta in Ayurveda.
Pitta is fire, correct?
It's fire and water. Yeah. But the fire element is the one that is,
pushing. I definitely have more Pitta.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. For sure. And the Delta is Kapha, earth and water. That's Delta.
Okay.
That's the loyal, the dependent, the supporter. That's the backbone of you. That's the Delta. That's Kapha.
Man, I hope doctors are listening to this and enjoying it. And I want you to also tell people how they can. I mean, I know this is probably a part of your system, but many people need to go through this and understand it. Yes. And so many physicians need to at least have this tool. Like you can probably look at someone and your brain now, even just subconscious, is like, I know their type, right?
Yeah, totally.
Let me know if you guys have been experiencing more of any of the following than you used to. Brain fog, difficulty staying focused, fatigue, muscle weakness or changes in balance and coordination, mood fluctuations, apathy or lower motivation, sleep issues, changes in sex drive or function, or increased sensitivity to certain foods, or just more digestive stuff going on in general. Now I ask because these are all warning signs that your brain may be struggling. Any one could be an early indicator of serious things to come. And if ignored or left unchecked, especially if you're experiencing more than one, these could significantly increase your risk of dementia, Alzheimer's, Parkinson's, these neurodegenerative diseases that include cognitive decline. The secret to unlocking the full potential of your brain comes down to three simple steps. One, precision diagnostics. This is why in our coaching program, we use the most sophisticated brain and neurocognitive testing on the planet. You then fix the deficiencies, those hormones, neurotransmitters, and nutrients that may be out of balance. And then you clean up the toxins, the stress, and the inflammatory microbes that may be interfering and making the whole process less efficient. I'm going to do two crazy things that I've never done before. I'm offering a 100% money back guarantee, meaning if you follow the prescribed game plan that you and I create together and don't experience a significant, trackable, measurable improvement in your memory, processing speed, mental clarity, mood, and quality of life, I don't want your money. I want to give you a full refund. But stick with me because I'm going to level it up even more. If your increased energy, brain health, and mental performance doesn't help you earn at least as much additional income as you invested in the program, I'm also willing to give you a full refund. I wanted to do this so that you know that you have absolutely nothing to lose, everything to gain. If you want to level up, go to biohackercoaching.com. Thank you.
We were talking about sort of like the inborn innate tendencies, and you were going through some of the different selective criteria. I think people will want to know how to do that, whether that's with you or whatever it is. If there's more to talk about there, for sure.
I also, we'll just
keep going. People kind of like it conversational anyway these days.
Yeah, for sure.
But I have to tell you this, and this is complimentary. I was considering canceling our podcast today not because of you. It's just like the past, one of my buddies has a huge podcast in the finance space, and he'd had a whole bunch of gut stuff that he'd been struggling with for like 10 years. We cleared it up in a few months. And so he just made a video talking about his story. He put it on his podcast. So then a whole bunch of people have been applying for coaching, and I've been having conversations with them and everything. And I've been on the phone so much, and I don't love the phone. I don't love Zoom, but I realize it's an important part of our mission.
Yeah.
And I'd been in the sun all day, and I was like, maybe I should just cancel the podcast, and I'm so fucking glad I didn't. This is amazing. So thank you. Let's please continue. I had a little nudge. I was like, don't cancel it. Just set up the stuff, have the conversation, and let it go. So Dr. Atoussa Madavi, thank you so, or Madavi, not Maldavi, Madavi, thank you so much for this. Let's continue. You were telling us about the inborn innate tendencies, the criteria, and
the psychology,
and also recognize, like, we have tons of healers, like not just people that are healing, not just people that are at the top of their game that want to see, that want to explore the boundaries of their human potential, but we also have a lot of healers that are like, how do I integrate some of the best tools from the past 6,000 plus years into what I'm doing?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Right, so please continue.
Yeah. So going back to where we left off, the third aspect was the psychological. And we were talking about what is pitta, what is kapha, and the delta and alpha, and the what was the other one?
Bravo. So like alphas.
Bravo. You mentioned the
alphas,
bravo.
Betas, you know, alphas, and bravo. Bravos, so the, and then deltas and all that.
But the translation to that, the bravo would be vata, would be air and space. That's the creative. That's the artist.
Who would be that?
Vata. Bravo. Vata. V-A-T-A. And that's air
so
and
you're
space.
Saying the betas, like what is considered a beta male? Or are we talking about different things?
No, we're talking, I think we're talking, you said a bravo personality.
Yeah.
Didn't you talk about that? That was your word.
Yeah.
And I equated that, if my understanding of what you meant by bravo was correct, I equated that to a vata in Ayurveda, which is a combination of air and space.
Interesting.
Which
okay.
is the cool. creative, which is the vivacious, which is the enthusiastic, which is the open heart, and
but oh, it's air
and space, so it's a bit ungrounded, a little bit unstable.
All right, this makes sense. We're on the same page. Yes, I like this.
Yeah,
I just had to think of real world examples and kind of make sure it checks out, and it does.
And then your pitta, which is fire and water, is the visionary, is the leader, is the alpha, it's the go-getter, you know.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have the kapha, which is earth and water. And that's the grounded, that's the solid behind the leader, that's the loyal, that's the dependable. And that has a lot of force, right? Like, that's why every leader wants one of those behind them.
Yeah,
and
That's the delta.
I mean, I believe so. It's not the alpha, then it's the delta, I think.
Yeah. Okay, cool.
Yeah. And
deltas are very like accomplishment, task-oriented. Like, tell me what we need to do to complete the mission, and I will get that shit done.
Yes. And they usually don't want to be in the position of the leader.
Yeah, exactly.
They want to be the one behind them.
I love
and
this.
And get the things done, yeah.
It's just let's integrate a few thousand years of knowledge.
Yeah, I'm from trying.
From different cultures. No, you're doing a great job. Not a small task.
And now here is what I need to add. Each individual may be either predominantly one of these or two of these, a combination of two of them. And most people are a combination of two, but then one would be the primary, then the other one would be the secondary.
And of course, situational.
Could be situational. It could be just the way that your different systems are more predominant in one dosha versus the other.
Mm, okay.
You may be like very pitta in the mind, very fiery in the mind, but you may have like a very air and spacey body.
Mm.
You know what I'm saying? Like, so it could be, or digestion, you know, something like that. So, but
one second. This will be a funny example. When I was growing up as a kid, even in grade school, the teachers would tell my parents, like, Anthony is like a natural born leader, but he does not care. He's like completely indifferent to it. Like the kids like want him to lead and he's just like, eh, you know? But I was always captain of the sports teams and like captain of the varsity soccer team, all conference, everything like that. Most respected in high school, but also never, ever cared. And I would see a lot of the kids that were like, kind of like the most popular, which I would not consider myself that.
Were they competitive?
Way more. Yeah. I was competitive in sports. I wasn't competitive in like stuff that I thought was dumb. Right. But I would also like, I grew up caddying for Michael Jordan from the Bulls. And so I'd be around him and I'm like, I'm not even close to an alpha around this guy. I'm like, this guy's like the most alpha I've ever encountered in my life. And I spent a ton of time with him. So it's like, I got to serve this dude, you know, and I became pretty much a Delta and Bravo to Michael Jordan. Mm-hmm. It's just fascinating how the different situations. And then there's been periods where I've been a total Sigma, which is almost like James Bond's kind of a Sigma, where not in the cool way. He just doesn't give a shit about society. He's almost like, you're all doing the wrong things. I don't care. I'm going to march to the beat of my own drum. And then there's a lot of times where I'm also a Sigma, you know? So I mentioned that not because I just want to like talk about myself on the podcast, but to help people connect dots and how it's so situational. Like if I'm on the soccer field and I'm the captain of the team, I have to lead and I have to be like, all right, we have to charge. Winning is on my shoulders. But then if I'm caddying for Michael Jordan, I'm a total Bravo or Delta. I'm like, he's playing for $10,000 a hole and I need to help him win.
Yeah, but that's different. That's discernment. That's discernment. That doesn't say that your core personality is a Bravo.
Okay.
So in Ayurveda, it's not, your prakriti doesn't change based on situation.
Okay, because we're talking about the inborn part.
The inborn quality, born, you know, this way. But discernment, when you're in front of a master, but you're not a master of that craft.
Right.
That's discernment. That's awareness.
Mm.
You know, that's bringing yourself to a place of appreciation of that. Master.
Well put. Great example. I get it.
Yeah.
I'm with you.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah. So then in Ayurveda, the three structural, physiological, psychological, and tongue analysis and pulse analysis. This is how we determine the prakriti. But then we have to determine the vikruti, which is the doshas at the present moment, or the constitution at the present moment, or the dosha of imbalances, or your imbalances according to the elements.
Okay.
That's now. So how do we determine that?
And so, what's the name for that? The Prakruti? Prakruti was your inborn. What is it like now?
Prakruti is the inborn. Now is Vikruti with the V.
Vikruti. Okay.
Vikruti. Yeah.
Okay.
And that is determined again by a series of questions. First of all, we need to know why is the patient or the client here? Why are they seeing us? So that will be the chief complaint. What are your symptoms? So you give them a checklist of the symptoms. I have this, I have that, I have this, right? And then you take a very thorough history, which is similar to the conventional medicine history taking. Medical history, family history, surgical history, medication, la, la, la. And the on, like, when did it start? Like, a lot of questions about your symptoms. But then these are, when we ask questions that relate to physiology or, let's say, the symptoms, we're always asking what is going on now, what is going on when all these symptoms are started. So if someone most of their life had a regular bowel movement twice a day, but for the last 2 years, they have irregular bowel movement and they only go every other day, that's a Vikruti.
Right.
That's the presenting doshas for the last 2 years at the present moment. That's Vikruti. That's that imbalance. Now, what happens when a lot of people fill up Ayurvedic quizzes online to determine their own Prakruti? Invariably, 90% of the people get it wrong. I know that because I'll have patients either in my private practice or at the university, and they say, oh yeah, I did an online quiz on the dosha quiz or constitution, and I was this and that. Then we do our, you know, standard professional based on, you know, really the knowledge that is gained
required.
Acquired. And it's not that, it's different. Why?
Well, a lot of those quizzes ask like 20 questions. I've done one or two and I'm like, this does not help.
Yeah. And not only 20 questions, they don't even emphasize when you answer, is it short-term tendencies or long-term tendencies?
Yeah, yeah.
So people are mixing up short-term tendencies and long-term tendencies.
They're like lead magnets to build their email list. It's not helpful. I'm not saying everyone, I'm not even naming names, but that's been my experience twice. And what you're saying is far more in-depth and helpful.
Yeah. Yeah. And, you know, if someone also, like, if you go to an Ayurvedic practitioner or doctor and they give you a form and without any explanation, you just check off your tendencies, that can't be accurate either.
I sometimes just do a straight line down on the no. I'm just like, no on everything. Like, I did that at Dr. John's office in advanced rejuvenation. I was just like, nope, I don't have any of these. I didn't do checks. Yeah.
That's funny. Yeah, I'm talking about like when they do the Prakruti, like they want to determine your, and so because they don't want to spend the time. But so then you also, when you take the pulse and you look at the tongue, you also are not only looking at the normal constitution or Prakruti, but you're also looking at Vikruti or the imbalances. Both the pulse and the tongue will also give, I mean, the tongue and the pulse both give you the Vikruti and the Prakruti, both.
Okay. Now, so the change, you get the Prakruti to almost have, that's your baseline.
Exactly.
The Vikruti is the change. I'm not going to use the word delta again because this is a different meaning, but it's the change between the Prakruti and where you're at right now. Why are you here? What's changed between your overall tendencies for most of your life and what you're experiencing right now? Cool.
Yeah.
Getting it. The tongue, just as a side element, so many people experience like white coating on their tongue. And you'll hear, oh, it's candida. Oh, it's blood flow. Oh, it's heavy metals. Oh, it's parasites and infections and overgrowths in the gut. Oh, it means you're too vata and versus not enough pitta. Or in traditional Chinese medicine, they'll say you're eating too much cold and you need to be eating hot.
Oh, yeah.
What is your observation with what's going on with the tongue and why so many people experience a white coating on their tongue and how is it addressed and how do you see it resolved? and then we'll continue. Okay. We're going to continue with the Vikruti, but I can't leave that because it comes up. So the people send me messages on Instagram all the time and pictures, and it's so different for everyone. So I want to hear your take.
Yeah. So when we do Ayurvedic tongue analysis, a trained Ayurvedic eyes don't see only white coating. Something that most people that aren't trained Ayurvedically look at the tongue and they see a coating and automatically it's white. They're not seeing the gray. They're not seeing the yellow. They're not seeing the brown. They're not seeing purple. So when we do Ayurvedic tongue analysis, there are all these different colors of coating that will tell a different story.
Mm.
And depending on what story they tell, then we can gauge and see what tissue, what organ system is impacted the most.
Mm.
And what dhatus or what tissues are impacted the most. So in Ayurveda, tissue is dhatu in Sanskrit. So we're looking at different tissues, different organ systems or shrotas. And it's not simply, oh, you have a coating, you have a white coating. No, it could be white and gray. It could be all white. It could be white with a little bit of yellow or a lot of yellow. And what it means when your tongue is coated, no matter what color, you have what we call an ama or toxicity in your system.
Is that AMA?
AMA, AMA.
AMA, oh, like the American Medical Association.
AMA, AMA.
I would agree. Yeah. That's a good acronym. Jokes, people, just jokes.
That's funny. So, yeah, so AMA. So you have AMA, you have toxicity. Mm-hmm. Depending on the color, depending on other markers on the tongue. For example, do they have a lot of cracks? Do they have red spots that are bumpy? Do they have teeth marks? Like people think that having teeth marks on your tongue is normal. It's not normal. And it could mean that you have malabsorption, dehydration.
Teeth marks?
Teeth marks. Like,
wouldn't that just mean that you're biting your tongue?
Maybe.
I'm no expert in Ayurveda, but if I see teeth marks on a tongue, I'm going to be like, let me tell you, you're biting your tongue.
When someone sticks out their tongue in an Ayurvedic evaluation, if the corner of the tongue are scalloped, indented, or teeth marks, we call it scalloping. But some people say,
so it's not actually like a mark from the jawline. That's a term.
No. No,
okay.
It's scalloping. It's like if I could draw it, you know.
Yeah, I got you. I know. You got it? Okay. People can look it up too, and like they can see these. There was even a bunch. I think most people are following and understanding this visually, but there was a while where Miley Cyrus, the singer, she always does her thing where she sticks her tongue out. And people were like, what the F is going on with Miley Cyrus's tongue? It's like all white and coated and stuff, you know? And the people were like, oh, she has candida, or she has heavy metals, or she has toxins, or she has this or that. And there was all this speculation on the internet. So we're talking about that, but we're going way deeper. And you're saying, no, it's not just white. You got to look at yellow. You got to look at brown. You got to look at purple. You got to look at cracks. You got to look at these scalloping or bumps, teeth marks, which are not necessarily you biting your tongue, red spots,
but
everything.
Everything. But we also look at the size of the tongue, the thickness of it. Is it thin? We also look at the color of the tongue. Is it red? Is it pink? Is it pale? And all of that is telling us a story about Prakruti and Vikruti, both.
Okay. Holy cow.
Okay. But of course, then some people can have thrush or candida. Mm-hmm. And that's, you know, definitely a finding, you know, that some people have overgrowth of candida. And that is usually definitely all white, is thicker, a lot thicker. It can extend to their throat.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, that is a different presentation.
Right.
So that's the tongue. And then you have the pulse, which you have also seen Chinese medicine doctor take the pulse. It's different from the medical pulse. We're looking at many different things. These three fingers.
Right before the pulse, though. the tongue. If someone's tongue's all jacked up, right? They've got a coating, they've got some of these colors. Probability-wise, statistically, what do you see as the root cause problem the majority of the time? And I know you can't say that, you can't cover everything, but like there's the, you know, Pareto principle, the majority of the time, what's going on when someone's got shit going on with their tongue? Because it's like a growing problem and it's not always just candida.
No. So usually two major categories in Ayurveda have to be addressed if someone has all these different things on their tongue. One is detoxification. We do detoxification, or you could say, well, okay, let me just talk about the categories. So one is detoxification of the ama, or the toxic presence of the toxic elements. Two is the digestive fire. We need to correct the digestive fire, okay? So if the digestive fire is out of balance and there is toxicity, you see all these kind of abnormalities on the tongue. So those are the first two places that we go to fix it.
Okay.
So the digestive fire or agni and the ama or toxicity has to be corrected. So we do what is called dipana pachana, which means a scraping and increasing the fire, dipana pachana. So we scrape the tissues from the toxic elements, and then we increase the digestive fire.
So would the scraping, would the scraping be something like, okay, let's figure out what you're consuming that is causing mucus buildup in your body? What are some of the mucus producing foods? We need to reduce those. That's going to scrape out the insides, maybe even combined with some binders. I don't know if you guys do that, but I've had people where a client just told me that she's like, my tongue was coated. I never even told you, but you put me on your detox binder protocol and it was gone in 2 weeks. And I was like, oh, cool. Yeah. Is that an example, like reduce mucus in the body, find out what foods they're eating, dairy, stuff that is not biocompatible for their,
for their constitution. Yeah. So something that is not compatible with their constitution, prakriti, and their present vikriti.
Okay.
So we'll fix their diet to eliminate the causation, but we will also look at their lifestyle. Are they going to bed at 2 a.m.?
Mm.
So like the time
I go to bed at 2 a.m. a lot.
Are it really for real?
I swear to God. Yeah. Like I get rocking, and a lot of times especially if I have a super busy day, then sometimes I'll get into the work that I couldn't do when I was on nonstop calls, and I'll stay up too late. I feel like this is a confessional. How many Hail Marys do I need to say? I mean, I know I shouldn't, but it's also sometimes the quiet time where no one's around is when I can actually do the building work and that sort of thing. And anyway, it's not about me.
But let me tell you a secret.
Okay,
a lot of pita fire people have an increased energy during 10 p.m. to 2 a.m. Why?
Yeah.
Because that's the pitta time of night.
Yeah.
The pitta time of night. So the energy. So if you fight the melatonin that is increasing at 9 p.m. All the way to 2 p.m., 2 a.m., and that's when you get the deepest sleep, and from 9 p.m. to 5 a.m., all of your organs are going through detoxification. That's why I'm saying you also look at their lifestyle. So are they also staying up late? Are they, quality of sleep?
I know all the circadian rhythm and all that.
Yeah.
I've done it. It's so much more. Anyway, enough about me. No one cares. No one gives a shit about me. Okay. Anything else that you would include in the ama, like scraping part? Like, so your lifestyle, your circadian biology, which you just said, which is huge, the right foods that aren't producing mucus and other things that are interfering. Anything else that you want to add there before we get to the digestive fire part?
Yeah. So we basically fix their daily routines. So then you detoxify through changing their diet to be more like correct for their constitution at the present moment. And of course, considering their normal constitution, daily routine. So when they wake up, when they go to bed, when they do their meal time. So you regulate their lifestyle. You regulate their diet to detoxify their diet. You also give them herbs. You give them medicinal herbs that are detoxifying. Again, deep and apachana herbs. Those refer to herbal categories, deep and apachana. I have a book, Holy You.
I was going to make you wait till the end to plug, but you're sending so much good stuff. No. Let's send it now. Where can people get your book? You've already added so much value. Tell them where to get it, and we'll continue.
They can go to Amazon, and it's Holy You by Dr. Tusama Dhabi. And it became an international bestseller.
WHOLLYU by Dr. ATOUSA MAHDAVI. Guys, if you've gotten value from this episode so far, go get it. Get the book. The stuff's in there, and it will systematize this. Mm-hmm. And then you don't have to rely on digital resources that can easily be changed or disappear or buried in the search results.
Yeah.
Support the lovely lady that's sharing her wisdom with you now and has synthesized 6,000 plus years of knowledge and integrated it with what's going on in the world today.
That's true. So So I have a whole chapter on the concept of Ayurvedic detoxification and different things that they can do.
Do you have this process that people can like of finding your Prakruti and Vikruti? Are they in there? Can they do it in your book?
No, because like I said, it's so in depth.
Yeah.
You can't put it in a book.
Why not? Like 100 pages. Make it like 100 pages.
Yeah, I mean, the book is 170 as it is. So yeah, I had to add another.
All right. No. Next book, I'm requesting that in your next book.
All right.
You don't have to listen to me, though. I'm a guy without sleeves.
I mean, I can make it so in-depth and so clear that people will really come up with an accurate result.
Well, you also have such a specialized skill set where you could give people the whole intake questionnaire.
Yeah.
But they will never develop what you have from pattern recognition and doing this for thousands of people. You don't even necessarily need all the things. You can look at me and see what I've got going on. And you can look at someone and you probably can't turn it off, you know, but this, what would help a lot of healers to have a better template than like, oh, I got to test your hormones and tell you if your testosterone's high or low, and then you got to take testosterone. You know what I mean?
I know. And it is funny because a lot of them are like saying the same thing and it's getting so much.
We got a lot of parrots. That's why I was such a big fan of functional medicine and this and that everyone just started saying they're a functional medicine practitioner. And then they're all just like, chop, 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 chop. I heard this on Huberman and I'm going to say that. And I'm like, I love Andrew Huberman, great guy, but he's never worked with people one-on-one. He's good at reading double-blind placebo-controlled studies and taking scientific consensus and sharing it in a way that a lot of people can understand. He's a great teacher. He might be the best teacher that's ever lived, but he's never taken people with extremely rare health challenges and solved it for them. And all these people are only going there and thinking that's the scientific consensus. Like I'm fascinated by what you're talking about. Love Huberman too. Honestly, he's a bro, great guy. He came to my event in 2017. We hung out. We spent a lot of time together. I love him. I just also don't understand. I don't think people are thinking sometimes.
Yeah. Honestly, just as a clinician, like someone who's hands-on clinical, in a clinical setting for 28 years, I will tell you, if you think that everything that someone is just saying, scientifically speaking, which is correct, scientifically speaking, that they know the challenges of actually treating someone, knowing all the facts, knowing all the science behind it, knowing all the tests that you could do, write the report, mm-hmm. in a very scientific manner, but treating someone is so different than knowing the knowledge.
It's totally different.
If you're not a clinician, or someone that has worked with people, you know, you don't know the challenges of each individual that, you know, comes in to see you. And that requires a different finesse and discernment of a healer that knows the pros and cons of different protocols on different situations. It's, again, some of these people are trying to make it a cookie cutter. Mm-hmm. They're trying to make it a cookie cutter that everybody needs this, everybody no gluten, everybody no meat, everybody no dairy, everybody should do EDTA, everybody should do methylene blue, everybody should do chelation. No, stop it.
Yes, I agree. I agree. And just to further elaborate, like, honestly, I really do. I've spent a good amount of time with Andrew Huberman. We created a course on biohacking. Stanford professor of neurobiology. We created a course on biohacking the brain together. I know he's a good guy. I like him. I have no bad energy. I'm not saying that. I'm just saying, like, there isn't a cookie cutter approach, and there is a total difference between just looking at studies that are in by nature scientific consensus and have gone through a system that most of us actually know has some flaws and can be manipulated, and then just adding those things into your routine and thinking that's going to fix complex problems.
Yeah.
Particularly when you will find, and I'm not, this is again, done with Huberman. Great guy. Love him.
Yeah.
A lot of these podcasts will not talk about many topics that matter. Mm-hmm. They can't. They will get censored if they do. Mm-hmm. And anyway, so should we move on to digestive fire part of detoxification and then
the pulse?
How do you increase digestive fire?
So
did I get too intense there? Was that too intense? I feel like I threw you off a little bit. I don't want people thinking like I don't like Huberman. I'm like, we've gone on long runs together. We've shot shit. We talked about writing a book together. Like, I really do like the guy. He's a great guy. I'm this isn't about him. It's just an example because God bless him. He's had a tremendous amount of success. But so many people just want a savior that's going to tell them what to do, and they turn their brain off. I'm saying, like, you, anyone listening, you've got a fucking great brain. And you have this guidance system, this internal emotional guidance system, and this intuition. Don't get all up in your head and turn off your heart and be misled, especially if you're not listening to someone like you, who has helped tons of people in the real world. That's all I'm saying. Maybe I didn't communicate that. Sometimes I get fired up.
Yeah. No, I totally, and it's true. Like, you know, there is a reason why, you know, when you choose a doctor, even in a conventional medicine, you always want someone at least with 10 years of clinical experience, not someone who graduated at the top of their class, valedictorian of the class, went through their, let's say, orthopedic surgery, just finished that. And are you going to go to him?
Well, maybe if he's got experience, but not if he's like fresh out.
That's what I'm saying. If he has just graduated, graduated.
No chance.
Or are you going to pick a doctor who's 10 years or 15 years of smashing those bones? He knows the ins and outs of an actual body, cutting through it, knows the risks, immediately can respond to something that is not going well.
You're going to round out please keep
going. Someone is only an academic or scholar in medicinal sciences, in biohacking sciences or whatever, functional medicine, but zero clinical experience, I'm sorry, you can verbatim recite a functional medicine textbook, but if you haven't. And I'm not saying that about anything in particular. I don't even know this gentleman you named. But I see other people online that, functional medicine and this and that. And I'm like, and then do this. And everybody's repeating the same thing. Mm-hmm. And a lot of them, like a lot of these big names after COVID, and I'm not going to say the names, but suddenly, a light bulb went on, and now there is alternative medicine, and holistic medicine. They're like MDs, you know, or they're scientists, and suddenly they have their own whatever protocol, and they're like selling stuff. And oh my God. And don't get me started on that. But
we'll do a part two. We'll do a part. Guys, if you're enjoying this episode, send a message to Dr. Atoussa Madavi send a message to myself on where are you most active on social? We're going to continue.
IG, I would say.
IG, yeah, I look at IG as well. So send us a message and say like, hey guys, please do a part two. We'll share some clips from this episode. Send this episode to people. Oh, yeah. And if we get a ton of shares of this episode and a lot of you guys are listening to it and resonating with it, then we'll do a part two. You know, and that's how you let us know that you want us to spend time. Like Dr. Madhavi was very patient while I spent like half the day setting up the studio out here. You know, so like we'll share our time if it's helpful to you guys. And if you guys acknowledge that it's helpful by sharing it with other people and then send us a message that you want a part two. You know, that's kind of how this works, because most of the stuff that at least I joke about, because I'm not a doctor and I don't practice medicine, it gets you shadow banned. And we set a record in January for getting one of our episodes shut down and banned on YouTube in less than 10 minutes. So if you guys want this stuff to reach people, you can't depend on the algorithm. We need you guys to be a force for good along, at least with us. I mean, you're a force for good too, but my opinions are not your opinions. You're keeping it pretty tight and pretty clean because you should. And I agree. Yeah, yes. So
what else did you want us to talk about? So the digestive fire, you asked a question.
Yeah. Was there anything we wanted to close out there before we moved on?
It's linked. So correcting the digestive fire also is interconnected with removing ama or toxicities from the body. Mm. Because let's say you have fire burning, right? And instead of giving it something that fuels it more and keeps it alive,
you're throwing soggy moss.
Or something like that, right? You put something on it that is lower, like I'm talking about, this is your digestive fire. And instead of giving it good food to fuel it, to keep it alive, you're dumping bad food and it's basically putting the fire out.
Is that something that's universal, or does that integrate and is that partially determined by someone's vata pitta nature, by their prakruti, by their vikruti?
Yes, some parts of it is universal. Okay. Some parts of it is universal.
So if someone wants to increase their digestive fire, what should they be eating more of?
Well, stay away from heavy food. Like, you know, some people eat so much at one sitting. Mm. So eating heavy.
You mean like Americans?
Yeah. Yeah, eating greasy food, fried greasy food, food, eating the wrong food combinations, like
carbs and fats.
You have dairy with meat.
Okay.
You have two different kinds of meat, steak and eggs.
Do you even eat commercial dairy? Like, would you eat dairy that's been pasteurized and homogenized and is sitting on the shelf in a grocery store?
I have my voice with dairy. I'm very tolerant to dairy, and that's nutrigenomics. That's ancestral diet, which comes from functional medicine perspective. Mm-hmm. But I also have a strong digestive fire, but I stay away from all dairy.
I knew that about you. Dairy. I was going to tell you that earlier.
Yeah, I stay away from all dairy. Oh, you're saying that jokingly. I'm like, yeah, how does
it? No, I'm joking.
How does it? I stay away from all dairy except organic, soft goat cheese. That's it. But I don't even have it any time of the day except breakfast. So
do you get it from your own goats?
Goat? No, I wish.
I was trying to see how hardcore you were.
Oh my God. I wish. I mean, and yeah, so that's the only dairy plus purified butter or ghee.
Yeah. Yeah.
Purified butter or ghee organic.
That came from Ayurveda, right?
Yeah, that is Ayurveda. So that's it. That's the two dairy items that I have. Mm-hmm. Nothing else. No milk, nothing like. And maybe once a month, if I have coffee, I don't drink coffee. Mm. If I do, maybe once a month, I'm outside. That's the only time that I add like a, you know, half and half to that. And that's, you know, very rare. Once a month or once.
Why don't you do coffee?
Most coffee is full of mold. Coffee is acidic. It's a stimulant. And I don't want to be stimulated. I don't want to be acidic.
Are you not stimulated right now?
I am, but I don't. That's why I don't need the coffee.
I'm totally put.
Yeah, some people, and it's an adrenal suppressant, right? Mm-hmm. Coffee. If you rely on coffee to be awake and alert and all of that, eventually you're gonna make your adrenal suffer.
Totally.
Or adrenal fatigue, etc.
Yeah.
And so, yeah, I mean,
those are good reasons.
I do green tea and black tea. Those are my stimulants.
You like the, so those are your go-to, like if you want a little caffeine, you do green tea, black tea, you do organic?
Organic, for sure. Organic.
For sure. Yeah. Do you drink tap water?
Absolutely not.
No, shit's poison, right?
Yeah.
All right. I like seeing where people are at in terms of their consciousness. If someone's like,
No. I mean, I haven't had tap water for probably 30 years, 35 years.
No judgment here, but do you have a shower filter?
Do I have a shower filter?
You need a shower filter. You don't.
I need a shower filter.
You gotta get one.
I moved a year ago, and I remodeled my new place, but I haven't put a shower filter in the new place yet. But I have a reverse osmosis under my sink, and I use that only to wash my fruits and vegetables and cook with. But I get water delivered to me in glass jars. Spring water from Oregon in glass jars, not even in plastic. And that's my drinking water.
Is that Mountain Valley or another company?
Fountain of Youth.
Oh, look at that.
Yeah.
Never heard of it.
Yeah, it's. I think they just deliver in California, but they get their water from Oregon. I think recently...
You guys got some crazy shit going on in California.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, our water is bad.
What do you want to make sure we talk about in the next 5 to 15 minutes?
I mean, there is so much that I can talk about, but...
people got to get your book.
Yeah, clean diet. Yeah. People got to get the book. I have a chapter on breath work and meditation processes for insomnia, for anxiety, and a lot of people, like especially millennials, are suffering.
These poor kids.
Yeah.
Ugh.
Aren't you a millennial?
No, I'm 81. I'm like.
Oh, you were born in 81.
I'm born in 81. I'm a dinosaur.
You're not.
Your vitalitydoctor.com.
Yeah, yourvitalitydoctor.com.
All spelled out. They can get your book there. They can get all of your free resources. You've got a free ebook.
Mm-hmm. I have a free ebook. Yeah. They can subscribe to my newsletters. If they go to Amazon and get the book Holy You, all of my contact information is in there. And with the book, they get a free course on the book about the book. And it's free. And what else? So I just feel like making sure you drink clean water, which means filtered.
Yeah.
Whatever filter you can get your hands on that you can afford and you can get.
Don't and also go to, you can go to findaspring.com and you can get these big 7-gallon containers online where you can harvest your own spring water. Make sure it doesn't contain a whole bunch of total dissolved solids, but it's structured. It's way cleaner than the stuff that's got halogens and fluoride and chlorine and bromide in it. Please continue. I'm just adding. We're playing jazz here.
Yeah. So clean water, clean food, which means organic. I know it's more expensive. And honestly, even organic food is not 100% organic. Like they've changed the rules.
They changed definitions.
Yeah.
That's what liars do.
Yep. So recently, I've bought organic food for the last, let's say, 20 years. And recently, the same blueberries that I have bought from and cherry tomatoes from Whole Foods and Sprouts, maybe a different brand, but not they're carrying these organic cherries and blueberries. They don't taste organic. Mm-hmm. And I can tell the difference. I can tell you that these are not organic.
Have you started a garden yet?
I do, but it's not like I have a farm that I can grow blueberries. I have mulberry. I have two different types of mulberry, white and red.
What do you do with that?
But it only fruits in summer. So what do I do the rest of the year, right? I have
You can't live on mulberries.
Right. I mean, I grow mint, not basil. All of it is eaten by squirrels. I have that issue.
Those little squirrely MFers.
With rabbits and squirrels, you know. So, but I still, my sense of taste and intuition is great. So I can immediately tell, because I've bought organic food for 20 years. And before that, the food quality wasn't that bad, even if it was. But with the new advancements in genetically modified food and just genetic technology, you just don't, you know, it's not like you can trust even the organic stuff. So
yeah, I don't even like using the words advancement and technology with it.
Yeah.
Anyway, don't want to go down there. Anyway, we've had a great
clean food, clean water, yeah. Clean air, which honestly, I have to say, the days that they don't have the chemtrails, hopefully we have clean air. Right?
This is something that's kind of crazy. One of my buddies told me, so I was talking to him and his wife, and they have two little children. He said multiple times they have witnessed the trails being sprayed. And they have, rather than, he said, historically, I've gone to a place where I would get mad. And I'd be like, oh, they're doing it again. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. They're spraying it.
Yeah.
And then he instead said, I went to a place of love. I prayed for the people or the entities that were doing that. Mm-hmm. And I asked God to protect us. Mm-hmm. And if God felt that it was in our best interest to dissipate those chemtrails and to protect us from them. He said he's multiple times watched them disappear. And his wife was like, I've been with him while they've happened. Like, so you know how I believe that there is a creator, and I don't get into all the divisions and everything. I think most of us that have eyes can see that we were created by whether you want to call it God or whatever.
Yeah.
And In the Bible and many religious texts, it says, when two or more of you come together in my name, there I am.
Yeah.
And I think that is how we win this thing. And so him and his family literally will pray together and say, I pray for the people that are doing this. I pray for the things that made them want to do this. I pray to release hate from their heart. And God, if it is your will to protect us, please do so. And they've watched it work.
I believe it. I believe it. The power of intention and prayer and relying on a greater power than you. Yeah, I totally believe it. And I can relate to that because I've noticed it for the last 3 years, but before that, it wasn't that problem. I knew that they're working on the technology, but I used to get upset. And recently I'm letting go and letting God.
Yeah. Or even like, how many times does it say, pray for your enemies?
It does.
And how many times does it say like, fear God only? We have to recognize if we're doing something other than fearing God, that's a problem. Yes. If we're having negative emotions towards the people that may not wish well on us, we're making a mistake. I'm not saying we're doing something wrong and we should beat ourselves up, but these are missteps spiritually, I believe. The last thing that I'd like to ask you, because I was going to do it at the beginning and then we got on an awesome run with things. But you'd mentioned that story. I think it was you were talking about your grandma or grandpa and your dad carrying him or her.
Her. Mm-hmm.
Her. So this was your grandmother and your dad was carrying her?
Yeah. In the hospital. And he got very emotional and he lifted her up and she was already gone. And so he threw out a couple of discs.
All right. I'm already having a tough time, but I'm going to try to keep my shit together so we can finish this. My mom used to read me a story when I was a kid And it's this book called Love You Forever. Love You Forever. It's a children's book. And it's this mother that she every night after she's, you know, she's given birth to her son and they have this special connection. And every night she picks up her son. Come on, buddy. She picks up her son and she holds him in her arms. And she says, let me actually pull it up so I don't screw it up. I think I've got it here somewhere on one of on one of my tabs. I'll love you forever. I'll like you for always. As long as I'm living, my baby, you'll be. So my mom read that to me like a whole bunch of times when I was growing up. And the way that the story goes, the boy gets bigger and bigger. And eventually, you know, the mom sneaks in. He's so big, she can barely pick him up. And the boy is picking up his mother and saying the same thing to her. Saying the same line. He's holding his mother as she's dying. He says, I'll love you forever. I'll like you for always. As long as I'm living, my baby you'll be. Or he might say, as long as I'm living, my mom, my mother you'll be. You know? And that was beautiful. And you reminded me of that. And with that story, and I just wanted to share that before we kind of wrapped up. You told people where they could stay up to date with all the cool things you're working on.
Yeah. And thank you for sharing that, because it's funny you shared that. I kind of needed to hear it, I think, because I was the only one at my dad's bedside when he passed away. And he wanted me to help him walk to the table to sit. And he was still bigger than me, right? And I tried, and he attempted to, you know, use the walker and get up. He got up, but it was the moment that he had to go. And I sometimes think about that, and I'm like, I couldn't lift him. But then he just sat back down on the bed, and I helped him lay down. And that's the moment that he left his body. Yeah, so he was 86. But that moment is always with me. And the way that they take care of us when we're young, and then we take care of them when we should. But a lot of people are dying alone, right? Because of the change of the culture, you know, having your parents in nursing homes. And
That's what I mean about people no longer. We have to think from our heart. Get in your heart. Get out of your head.
Yeah. Is your mom still with us?
My mom is, yeah. My dad passed Parkinson's in August. And absolutely. I was blessed to be able to go back and spend the last few years with him. And I'm sorry for your loss as well. And I think a lot of people listening probably resonate with some part of this and have lost someone they love, someone that cared for them. And I think we're going through a great healing right now, where people are recognizing that we're not meant to be isolated and alone. And that is, a lot of that spell is black magic. And we're strong and united when we are families and when we look out for each other. And when we take the people who cared for us when we could not care for ourselves, and we reciprocate by caring for them until they decide to exit this physical world, or whenever it is decided for them. It's not always our decision.
Yeah.
Well, Dr. Atoussa Madhabi, thank you very much. Pleasure. It's been a great conversation.
Yeah, absolutely. It's one of those... one of my favorite conversations for sure. And to see your heart and to see how soft you are inside, even though you have a very alpha outlook, but that should teach others to open your heart. Being a man, being strong, doesn't mean that you close your heart.
Right.
And to see that,
it's our superpower.
Yeah.
Our emotions and our heart is our superpower.
Yeah.
And anyway, well, where can people, so yourvitalitydoctor.com, go there, get your book, Holy
You.
You. Holy sorry, my brain's all fucked up right now. I could barely finish sentences for the past That's couple minutes. Holy You.
Yeah.
Dr. Atoussa Moldavi. And guys, support Dr. Moldavi. I keep throwing an L in there for some reason. Support Dr. Moldavi's generosity with her time and wisdom by sharing this episode. Send it to doctors, anyone, healers, people who are helping people. Anything else you want to say before we jump off?
No, thank you for having me. It's a beautiful conversation. And like you said, it's a healing journey. We're all going through it together. The earth is healing. We're healing. But at the end of the day, I think the conversation came back to God.
Yeah.
And I totally know that we're in His good hands and that we need to pray. Don't forget that. And like you said, you quoted the verse from the Bible that we should come together and pray together and fear nothing but, like you said, God. And we will succumb the evil of this planet.
There's a lot of us that are, a lot of us, and this was me too, that we're trying to look for a strategic way in the material realm to get us out of a difficult situation. And I don't think there is a way to do it just in the material realm. And I do believe wholeheartedly that the answer is in the spiritual realm. And it is by enough of us uniting with a common vision for the future that embodies love and peace and harmony and freedom and praying together to bring that new earth to fruition. Appreciate Amen. You guys for listening. Amen. If you guys feel that and you enjoyed this message, whatever, share it, do whatever you want. Much love. Thank you for being a part of this journey. Thank you, Dr. Atoussa Moldavi. See, Noel that time. Look, it only took me
fucking
6 hours to get it right. All right. Thank you so much. Appreciate you.
My pleasure.